Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Good to Know Shreveport-Bossier. This is a podcast. We showcase all the good things, the positive things happening around the community. My name's Jeff Beinfor. Over here to my right, I'm going to, just Paul Reese here, I'm just going to refrain
today. Take it easy on me today.
Some of the things I normally say, a local businessman, a member of the Committee of 100. Now, every podcast, we focus on topics and initiatives that are having positive impacts around the community. As I said, we have new episodes available every other Wednesday, and you can find Good to Know wherever you listen to your podcast. So once again, the honors belong to you to introduce our special guest.
Thank you, Jeff, and thanks for taking it easy on me today.
I know, it's rare, don't get used to it.
So now today we have, as per usual, an awesome guest, okay? So her name is Cassie Hammett. She's executive director and founder of the Hub Urban Ministry, which has a very unique way of addressing homeless people where they are, but also helping people get out of homelessness, which is something you don't see very often, very successful. Also founder, executive director of Purchased, Not For Sale, which is an organization that helps women get out of sex trafficking and prostitution. It's amazing the things that she does and the unique perspective that she has. She's a nationally sought after speaker, podcast host, television person, very busy man. We're so lucky and fortunate to have you here today. Cassie Hammett, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. So I was unaware, as we were talking off the air, about your work, so I'm really interested to find out all about it today.
I'm excited to be able to talk about it.
Well, I didn't do a great job of explaining it. There's the Hub is the kind of the spoke to the wheel, but but you have several ministries, and it's right here in Shreveport. Mm-hmm. And even though you're all around speaking and being on TV, I didn't even mention you won an award in New Orleans from the FBI.
That's cool.
For her work with sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. Just amazing the things you've done.
Thank you.
Well, do a better job than he did.
Explain
what this is all about.
Yeah, so the Hub Urban Ministries is a nonprofit here in the city. This is our 17th year of being in Shreveport working. Under the umbrella of the Hub are three main ministries. The Lovewell Center, which is in downtown Shreveport. We serve those experiencing homelessness and material poverty there through an earning and empowerment model. Our second ministry under the umbrella is Purchase, Not For Sale, like he mentioned, which is an anti-trafficking effort here in the city and in the region. And then our third initiative under the umbrella is Rise Up and Roast, which is a social enterprise employing individuals out of homelessness, poverty, and sex trafficking. It's a coffee company, and we partner with Rhino Coffee.
Nice. So the second one you mentioned is Purchase, Not For Sale.
Yes,
that's the actual name.
Yes, that is the name.
Purchase,
yes.
Not For Sale. Uh-huh. Explain the origin of that name.
Yeah, so we're a faith-based organization, and there's a scripture that talks about how through Jesus we have been purchased no longer for sale. And so the messaging to those that we're serving is that the reality of you physically actually being bought and sold and traded is that you aren't for sale. As a person, and that's the message that we're trying to get out to people too, is that humans are not commodities and should not be able to be purchased.
Right.
So that's kind of the origin.
Now, this is an abhorrent thing that's going on. I guess it's gone on throughout time.
Yeah, it's the oldest profession.
It's just unbelievable that in this time, this stuff is still happening.
Yeah, it is. And for most people, it is really hard to wrap your mind around because more than likely you're not stumbling across it, right? It's not necessarily visible, especially in the last decade. Most of prostitution and sex trafficking has actually gone online, where usually before that, back in the day, which wasn't actually that long ago, 10 to 15 years ago, it was more of a geographically located issue, meaning certain parts of town and things like that. But that's not really the case anymore. Everything's done online, just like all of our lives are done online. And so it causes it to be less visible.
Yeah.
And so most people don't understand that it's something that's happening in our city, but it is happening in our city at pretty large rates, in fact. So we're working every day in the city to give exit to those who are experiencing sex trafficking and to create a pathway out to women who are engaging in the sex industry. Maybe they're not victims of sex trafficking. Maybe they're in exotic dancing or prostitution of their own volition or own choice. We have pathways out for those populations as well. And we unfortunately have pathways out for children. And that's something that we're working on every day as well.
The thing, I mean, what I've always been so attracted to of your ministry, I've been following you for 17 years. Mm-hmm. When you were just, that's why I keep calling you the young lady. You're still very young.
Yeah,
compared to
thank
me.
You. I'm
about you were 22
40.
Years old, full of fire.
I turned
fire.
40 in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, you're really young.
Yeah.
But it's so action-based, and you're connecting people in the community that want to get involved who don't know how to get involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's with a business or just a church group, you're actually connecting people. This is an action-based organization. So yeah. How do you get someone, like I met a guy, Herman, started out homeless, just out of jail. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, this guy needs to get a job. But that's kind of tough. But now right. Herman, so tell me the journey that Herman took through your organization.
Yeah, so I think it's important for people to know that the chasm between material poverty and employment and self-sufficiency is incredibly wide for some people.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, you know, you may pass someone on Uri Drive or wherever, and you may have a thought subconsciously or even say out loud, man, I wish they would just get a job, right? Or do something else. And I think it's important to understand that poverty affects a person at every level of their life. It's not just a material problem. It affects, there's psychological effects of poverty.
Sure.
It changes the brain. Research shows that living in poverty changes your actual brain and your brain chemicals and your brain's ability to function. Trauma, those experiencing homelessness have been through significant trauma that also changes your brain and lowers your ability to do certain things. And so, you know, it's not as easy as just go get a job.
Right.
The hurdles between that person on the side of the road flying that sign and then that person actively employed in the community are significant. And so our organization works to start wherever that person is and to do with them, not for them, the things kind of to walk the path with them. And our job, we see our job as mainly to remove the hurdles, right? To go ahead of them and remove
gonna
those
say,
hurdles.
I'm going to say, like, it's you see the homeless guy and you say, go get a job. You think that he might be trying to get a job.
That's right.
But
that's
people
exactly
that run businesses are like, nah, we're not.
Exactly.
So your organization is kind of a go-between, you kind of knock down some of the hurdles.
Yes, and so we walk with people through whatever, I mean, every single, and this is the other thing, every single person you see that is impoverished is completely different than the next. Just like the three of us are completely different.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness.
That is true. That is
what
true.
What are you saying, Paul?
Yeah, that's true about people experiencing material poverty is that every single person is completely different. And so what we do at the Hub through the Lovewell Center, it's a membership-based place. So we do that on purpose because those that we're serving in material poverty often don't have a place they belong. And when you're a member somewhere, you're supposed to be there.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So they're card-carrying members. They have a little card that looks like a debit card.
That's a good idea.
So
and
creative the way you guys have approached all these things. Because these folks, a lot of these folks, maybe they're not used to belonging anywhere.
They don't. Yeah, often they're only tolerated at best. And so as a member of the Lovewell, we're communicating you belong here, you're expected here. When you walk in, that's not a surprise to us, but you also have a voice here, and there are perks to being a member. So the perks are every single day that we're open, there are classes going on, different projects, things that members can participate in to earn credits on that membership account. Mm-hmm. And then inside of the Lovewell, we have stores. We have a grocery store called the Eat Well, a clothing store called the Dress Well, and then a laundromat called the Smell Well. And we're super creative. Real creative. Yeah, just attaching words to well. But and members can go into those stores or use those resources using their credits. So nothing we have inside of the Lovewell is technically free. The reason for that is because we want to reinstill in people's lives this idea of value and worth and skills and dignity, honestly. And so individuals who come in and become members are engaging in classes. You can also turn in your work stub. If you work an hourly wage job and maybe you're riding that like low income line between housed and unhoused, but you're working all day, they can bring in their check stub and we will give them point for hour. So let's say someone worked 40 hours last week, mm-hmm. they can come in and exchange that for 40 credits. And the reason we're doing nice. That is because we are a, for a lot of people that we serve, we are a supplement to their income, mm-hmm. right? To their yeah. budget, their yeah. bottom line. So we do we serve a range of people from those who are unhoused all the way through the materially poor.
It's such an opportunity because a lot of times you're like, well, that guy's working, why should he get something for free? But if you're underpaid, I mean, if you're the working mm-hmm. poor, you need that extra help. And we don't yep. want to, I don't think you want to penalize somebody for mm-hmm. now getting a job. You want
right.
to say, okay,
so this
now
is
here's
actually
a bridge.
An example of this. Just last week, one of our Rise Up and Roast employees, she's working 40 hours a week at a local restaurant, and her check was $315 for the week. And when we went over her budget, she, you know, went over all the line items that she's spending money mm-hmm. on. And I was like, I noticed there's no budget line item for groceries. And she was like, I just eat at work. I don't have the buffer yeah. mm-hmm. to buy myself food. That's why you don't see. And so you have this individual who's working 40 hours at a job, but is not eating because there's yeah. not enough buffer there for her. And so, yeah, I think for a lot of us, it's maybe been a long time since we've had a low wage job, or maybe mm-hmm. we never have. I mean, that's a lot of people's reality. But so we serve a range.
One of the biggest problems with government organizations to me is you keep a person at a bottom level, and once they begin to start to climb out of it, you take away their benefit, you penalize them for doing well. And what you're doing is actually encouraging people to do well, because if they get the job, now they get extra points, and that goes
exactly.
on their card.
Exactly. It goes on their account.
I love
account.
This idea, by the
it's
way.
It's on their account. And they can come in and save money by shopping in our food store and buying clothes, you know. And one thing that we have a really high standard of at the Hub is what is on the shelves is the best that we can find. Mm-hmm. We believe that those we're serving are not that different than us. They're materially our differences, but yeah. honestly, that's not that big of a deal, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
that's not that big of a dividing line. We make it, in our culture, a dividing line.
Sure.
But, mm-hmm. you know, we think, what would we want when we walked into a store? Mm-hmm. Well, we wouldn't want people's leftovers.
Right.
We wouldn't want to go into a food store and it just be like, expired back of the pantry items. So mm-hmm.
or this is your ration, you get these five things
exactly right. So that's another thing about the LoveWell is so it has the belonging through the membership, earning and empowerment is through those classes and projects, and then the last thing is the power of choice. So for most people in material poverty, they show up somewhere to get access to what they need, and it's a pre-made food bag. They didn't choose the items. Maybe it's clothing that doesn't
yeah.
fit them exactly right. Or honestly, people, this is kind of like outside of the box thinking, but maybe they don't like the clothes, right?
Sure.
Like maybe they don't like the food that's in the bag. And so at the LoveWell, they're choosing everything. There is no one telling them how to spend the things that they've earned. And I think they're leaving our building every day the same way that you and I leave stores. We don't think about this, but they're leaving proud of the things that they earned mm-hmm. and excited about the things that they chose. And so what we're trying to do is create an environment. So every class they're going to is designed to move them out of poverty, or move them out of addiction, or move them out of unhealthy relationships, right? All of these sort mm-hmm. of systemic things that happen when someone's, because material, a lack of material things is the least of their problems,
yeah.
typically.
Yeah.
So we're aiming at addressing the root that's going on so that they can truly move out of poverty and be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. That would be the goal. And so we serve a wide range of people, from unhoused individuals all the way through the working poor, those who are working low-wage jobs, hourly pay. And then we also have a section of LoveWell members that don't need us materially, but they need us relationally.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're in isolation, or they're lonely, or they don't have connection in the community. And so they come there to be a part of that. They may not need, you know, what's in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
I think a story that sticks out to me that will forever, it forever changed sort of my perspective of what we're doing, is there was an individual, a member whose son is very, very high special needs, and an adult son, and they come every day. They're there every day. And one day he was shopping in the store, and we looked at his his account, and he had thousands of points. Like, he was Lovewell rich.
Wow.
I
mean,
and so a staff member, like, literally just in passing was like, what are you storing all this up for? Why do you have all these points? Because he goes to all these classes. And just like, it was said so simply, but it was such a earth-shattering moment for us. But he said, well, my son will never be self-sufficient, more than likely. And when I pass away, this is his inheritance. And what we realized was, not only are we giving access to survival basic needs, we are creating an environment where people are getting to do something they never thought they'd be able to do, which is leave for someone else something that will outlast them. And that caught me off guard.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's very powerful. Yeah. And it's what we see happening at the Lovewell is we see generosity happening. You know, we have this population of people that society, for the most part, has decided on. But what we're seeing is that they're very generous when given the resources and that they want to help each other. You often hear someone in the back of the line hear that someone at the front of the line doesn't have the points they need, and never has it ever ended with that person not getting what they need. They all work together to provide for each other. Also, something they probably thought they never could do, right? Because they have a currency to be able to do that. And so we are seeing people leave poverty. We're seeing people go from unhoused to housed. We're seeing really radical change happening in this population of people that we're serving. But we're also seeing a whole culture change. When you come into the Lovewell, it is not what you expect. What maybe a outsider would expect. It is calm and peaceful and, for the most part, you know, every once in a while there's a full moon and things get a little, but yeah.
That's when Paul's here.
Yeah, yeah. So it is, it's their place, and they want to be there, and they're proud to be there, and they care for it in that way. And they're going to classes that range from addiction recovery and heavier things. Like, we have a class called Trauma-Rama, which is basically like how to learn how to process your trauma.
Trauma-Rama.
All the way through drum circle and creative writing and these spaces to be able to just express themselves. And so. Well,
and it's not a place where people just come and be served. That's why I was so interested in the Herman story. Just kind of quickly talk about his path through.
Yes. Yeah, so individuals get the opportunity to sort of go through the process and come back in as a helper and as a person who's engaging and making sure that people get what they need. Herman the Lovewell crew is what it's called, but it's essentially interns. And these are individuals who have engaged in the Lovewell programs, who have gone to the classes and are now wanting to just volunteer their time to be a part of taking care of people. And so we do have a group of people every week, our crew, interns that are coming in and helping us run the facility. And these are people who have benefited from and whose lives have changed from the Lovewell Center. And now they're sort of circling back around to be a part of it.
I can tell you have absolutely no enthusiasm
None.
For what you do.
Zero.
Total
Zero
passion.
There. Yeah.
But I am, the way you explain this is very intricate, the way you have this all set up. I'm intrigued by, how did the design for this come about? Was this your doing, or was this was all you?
I mean, me and a team of people. Yeah. It originated with us.
Okay. It just started out this 22-year-old girl that came into this, talked to these kids with so much enthusiasm, just like this, 17 years ago.
Yeah, it did actually start out of the trunk of my car.
Wow.
I didn't go to school for it. I didn't have this big, shiny plan. What you see now has been learned through relationship with those in material poverty. Mm-hmm. It's a response to the truth about their lives. It's a response to what they were lacking, but also what they're capable of, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you get others, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
How did you get others to buy in, for lack of a better phrase, to assist you with what you needed to assist them?
That's right. So the Hub's model is we essentially keep a very lean staff so that we have to ask other people to be involved in the community because we don't want to be a nonprofit that's just doing all the work and doesn't need people like you. And so at the beginning, honestly, it was a very organic, like I was learning about all these things with the new friends I had in the city that mm-hmm. were experiencing homelessness. And I was raised here. So I was just going to people I knew and just telling their stories and saying, like, we have to do something. The hub has never been a place where I said, here's what's going on and here's what I'm gonna do. It has always been, okay, you now know this like I do, so what are we gonna do? Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot organic at the beginning of just people hearing these stories and asking me, well, what do you need to do? And me saying, oh, no, what are we gonna do?
Yeah.
And taking people with me and saying, I want, you know, Paul was around at the very beginning, like, I want you, Paul, to meet this person, because it's not just my job to care for this person. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, it actually wasn't even a job. I wasn't being paid to do it. Yeah. But and even now, that is something that the Hub fights really hard to keep intact. 17 years later, you know, fully formed nonprofit, we have all these things going on. But we still turn to the community every day and say, here's what's happening. Mm-hmm. What are we all gonna do about it? And so now, 17 years later, we do most of that through our networks of partners in the city, whether that's churches, businesses, volunteer networks. That it's a little more less organic now than it was, but right. It's still the same idea of, this is our city. We mm-hmm. all live here. What are we going to do collectively to improve the standard of life?
A great perspective
for people.
Yeah,
yes,
I think it's really. Mm-hmm. I applaud you. This
Thank
is
you.
Fantastic story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
So anyone that wants to get there. Church group involved or your business mm-hmm. involved, you say, I wish I could do something.
Mm-hmm.
I can.
That's a dangerous thing to say in front of me.
I can attest that any time or mm-hmm. funds or anything I've ever directed to your organization has been well utilized. I mm-hmm. mean, you guys are efficient and you have a great mission. So I
Thank
love
you.
It. So I would
Thank
recommend
you.
To anyone that wants to get involved to reach out to you.
But my husband always jokes, don't tell my wife what you do for a living, because she'll figure out some way to be like, oh, hey, how about you do that for us for free?
You're so creative, like all these things. You say, oh, it's not very creative. It's just to put a well in front of it. It's so creative. It's
I think it is, too, just hearing about it for the first time,
Thank
honestly.
I hate that we had to just like quickly say, but the purchased is so powerful also. Mm-hmm. You talk about breaking the cycle. We don't think about the cycle of that next generation, but so many of these ladies have children
who are
going to be stuck in this
cycle. And a lot of the women that we serve, all of the women that we serve, are experiencing material poverty. So the thing about the Hub's ministries is they're all woven together. We serve women who have children, and it is a generational thing. You're watching not only this woman get exit out of sexual exploitation, which, by the way, is one of the most traumatic things that can happen to a person, mm-hmm. but you're watching subsequently their children gain access to freedom through their parents' life change. And we see mm-hmm. that happening all the time through the women that we're serving. And also the teenagers that we serve too. I mean, you know too that you are shaping them at an age where they're going to go on and now be adults in the future. And the hope is that you're catching them and giving them mm-hmm. exit out of exploitation, and they have so much runway of life ahead of them, you know? And mm-hmm. so that it is a very profound change. Sex trafficking and sexual exploitation is incredibly difficult to leave. Mm-hmm. Just like poverty, it is far more complicated to leave than people think. I think the, like, just go get a job, what it looks like in the exploitation realm is, well, she could just leave, or she could just stop dancing, or she could just stop prostituting. And it is absolutely just not that simple. And so our organization works, Purchase works in the community with law enforcement, foster care system, all the hospitals, the DA's office, any system that is involved in the lives of those being exploited, we have mm-hmm. a seat at the table. And what I will say about our community is that all of these places I've mentioned, there's so many more, but the Gingerbread House, the Caddo Juvenile Court, both Bossier and Caddo's DA offices, the Sheriff's Office, Shreveport, you know, Police, Bossier Police, we have over the last decade created an incredible response to sex trafficking in our community. It is, for the most part, efficient and responsive and clear. And because of that, we're seeing people like that get out. When they say they want out, there is a pathway. It is not a pathway. Yeah. It's not easy, but we've done the work over the last 10 years, and we're reaping that harvest now of just seeing. I have a meeting today with SPD, like the active approach they have to working with our NGO, which is pretty rare. We work with them regularly. The DA's office, we have diversion programs where women can go into our program in place of jail time. So I do want to say that, yes, the hub is leading some of that effort, but I can't leave out the fact that all of these systems that typically would not would miss this in our community are not.
They're working together
to see this.
Sure, and I was only half joking when I mentioned the Congress and the work you're doing, how it fits with everything that's going on right now, particularly at the southern border. But this is having far-reaching effects throughout the country, what's going on at our southern border. Are you seeing some of those folks come this way?
Not really.
No.
No.
Okay.
Most of our the individuals we're serving are either local from here or have moved I-20 or moving up and down I-20 from other cities. So no, not necessarily.
Okay.
But I mean, it does happen from time to time, but it is relatively rare.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah. That's a great question.
Because it's spreading throughout the country, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon. So I think. Organizations like yours are going to be very critical moving forward.
Yeah. And your bravery, the way you approach these things. So the way I found out about you is from my daughter. I'm going to cry on the show for the first time.
Oh no.
She's a tiny little thing like you, just a tiny little thing. And you, and next thing I know, when she's in high school, she's like, oh, I want to go work with Cassie at the hub. And we're going to go to strip joints.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you are not. And she's like, and I, you know, actually by that time, knowing my spunky young daughter, I didn't say, no, you are not. I said, well, what are you going to do in strip joints? She's like, well, I can't actually go in because I'm not 18. But just, and I hate to say real quickly, but I mean, the creativity and the bravery and the walls that you have broken down to meet people where they are. You know, we can't just say get a job. So how do you approach these young ladies?
So for women experiencing
and older ladies.
Yeah, exploitation, or for women in sex work, our philosophy is that we want to show up in their life now. Not when they say they're ready, not when they get their act together, you know, now. And we want to be their friends. We want to be their community. We want to be a group of people that aren't putting a lot of demands on them. Hey, we'll help you if you decide to leave this industry, or we'll be here when you decide that you don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
And so, yeah, we...
I don't want to interrupt. We got 2 minutes left. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, we go into the strip clubs regularly. We go to different parts of the city that are higher trafficked areas. We go into motels and all of that. And that's a weekly thing. And we're just trying to earn trust. We're trying to connect and be friends so that when someone does have crisis or wants out, it's a lot easier for them to reach out because they trust us.
How, as a follow-up, how hard, I mean, I know very little about this, but I've always heard that these women are controlled by men, I guess. How hard is it to get them away from those men that are controlling them?
Incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult. So often it requires, unfortunately, something pretty traumatic happening that lands them in a hospital or lands them getting arrested. Sometimes that saves people's lives. So it is incredibly difficult to create an environment where they are away enough for us to be able to get them out. And that's, we work with law enforcement really closely on that.
Okay, we're on our last minute, Paul.
Man,
don't
we haven't even talked about Rise Up and Rose.
It's
the work that you put
in. Can you come
back
another time?
I can come back. Yes, I will come back.
Let's ever come back, because she's making an impact in our community like people do.
Yeah, very valuable conversation.
How do people get in touch with you if they want you to come speak to their organization or if they want to get involved?
Yeah, so it's really easy. They can just go to thehubministry.com, and everything lives on that website. And you'll see when you go there how to volunteer. You will see how to donate if you want to financially give. And then you'll see specifically one thing I wanted to highlight was we have a local business network called Make It Your Business, which is essentially saying, you know, Paul has made it his business to end sex trafficking or to end material poverty. So we have you know, 20 to 30 local businesses that are in that network. And so you can go and find out about that on the website too. There's just literally 1,000 ways that you can get involved in what we're doing.
The main one is thehubministry.com.
Thehubministry.com.
Okay.
Yep.
And thank you for being
here.
Yeah,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. With that, we're going to have to wrap this up, but we're having Cassie back. This is an incredibly good conversation. And,
thank you.
And I think there's a lot more.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. You can watch this podcast every week, wherever you find your podcast. Thanks for being here. And as always, this has been Good to Know.